Hello and welcome back to the Arc of E podcast. My name is Noah and I am joined by one of my very, very favorite returning guests, our man in Texas, Mr. Nathan Stevens, joins us once again to discuss music in general, but in particular for this episode, he had a little adventure down at South by Southwest, and he's going to illuminate what and all that entailed. I'm sure you saw some bands. I think you performed as well. So he's going to tell us all about that. And then I think the plan is we're going to do our top five favorite albums of 2024 thus far, kind of talk about the first quarter of music, as it were. And that's the game plan, sports fans. So, yeah, from the top, good to see you. We're recording this over Zoom, and yeah, good to hear from you, bud. You're officially back in Texas and settled, and yeah, I'm very interested to hear about your musical adventures in 2024 thus far.
Well, yeah, I mean, having South by Southwest happen when you live in Austin is always a fascinating experience, because everything downtown, not necessarily around where I live, but you know, there's just these sprawling portions of the city that just become difficult to get around, difficult to park in, all that stuff. But of course there's a lot of fun stuff. I kind of want to clear the air on the first thing about it, because there was a lot of controversy leading up to South by Southwest this year, and a lot of artists dropped off of official bills, mm-hmm. of official South by shows. I did not go to a single official South by show this year. Everything I'm about to talk about is unofficial, did not have to pay for shows. And there's some extraneous political stuff, but I think the underpinning thing here is South by Southwest started as a music festival celebrating music, celebrating artists. And one of the big turnoffs for a lot of artists, including the first who, you know, kind of bailed from their official showcases, pulled out and lost money, was Squirrel Flower, and talking about how weapons contractors have become some of the biggest sponsors and speakers at mm-hmm. South by Southwest. And I think there's just so much cognitive dissonance in where South by started from and what it still brands itself as compared to what's actually bringing in the money. I got not really a huge problem with a lot of tech, but the tech now is basically the entire money driver of the entire week. And mm-hmm. on top of that, artists are not seeing those dividends. I worked for a radio station last year, and we did a story on this where South By was kind of stamping its feet because the city of Austin said, if an artist performs on City of Austin owned land, they have to be paid a certain amount. And basically South By started saying, well, you can't make us do that. You can't do this, that, or the other, you know, all these things. And meanwhile, you have Raytheon coming in and being a major sponsor of all this. And it's like, so you're doing both. You're in bed with weapons contractors and you're telling people that you can't give them any money.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I think that was the straw that broke the camel's back was this year, because everything kind of accelerated through COVID. I think South By was scared that they weren't making enough money because of how much stuff they had to close down during COVID and like the rebounding process. But there was also some really negative press over the last couple of years of how little people were able to actually make money or do things like that. And then
I mean, it definitely seems like it kind of COVID specifically kind of fundamentally broke the structure of touring in general, mm-hmm. where it's just like, now everybody lost out on a full like year and a half plus roughly. And, you know, the venue wants to recoup their losses. The band needs to tour. They couldn't do anything for, you know, 2 years. And meanwhile, they got to pay label, et cetera, et cetera. And then, like you said, it's just, I don't know. It's everybody just all of a sudden being extra greedy again, where it's just like, oh, okay. And it's like, hey, why don't we all like, can we rebuild this together? Is there a way to like equitably do this? And like, and hey, if it was kind of broken before, maybe now's a good time to fix it while we're right. like figuring all this shit out again. But
I don't know. And I had heard some scuttlebutt that some folks who had some potential partners that had decided to do unofficial showcases were kind of being strong-armed by South By to try to do official showcases. And the people I talked to had no interest, not just because of, you know, Raytheon and the military connections, but also just they didn't see any money aspect in it. Like, who cares, you know? So I'm doing that soapboxing first because I actually saw a lot of cool things. I got to see some amazing bands. Everything was in a much more DIY, self-produced state. Yes, it was messier. Yeah, there were less international artists than usual. But the thing is, at the end of the day, I was able to really talk and hang out and see some amazing shows from bands that I was not either super aware of before or I hadn't seen their live shows before. And I didn't feel like I needed to do that kind of networking, interfacing, get a badge, figure out a way to weasel my way into places. I felt like it was very open and free, and there was just music happening all around, which, you know, was kind of
the vibe that the original South by was always meant to be, right?
So that's like the positive aspect.
Right.
I would say in terms of cool events I went to, bands I saw, I went to something called Math Fest, which was, I didn't actually see anybody that was like straight up a math rock band, but like all kind of adjacent kind of things. Saw a great kind of emo adjacent band from Houston called Jump Rope. Saw a really wild band from LA called Wires. They were one of those bands where they had like I think 7-string bass with no headstock on it. The guitar had 8 strings. The drummer was obviously obsessed with the Mars Volta.
The closest I've ever gotten to that is Animals as Leaders live.
Obviously very into that sort of thing. They were wild. But the real key of the night were the closers, who were both screamo groups, a new group from Detroit called Heavenly Body or Heavenly Blue, 2 singers, super, super fun. And then not just the, I'm starting with the best show I saw at South By, not just the best show I saw at South By, the best show I've seen this year so far, Frail Body from Rockford, Illinois. They are a 3-piece screamo outfit. They've toured with Charleston homies To Forget. And it was this overwhelming, overpowering, incredibly cathartic moment. The album that they're about to come out with, I got a promo for it. It's excellent. Is about the frontman's mother passing away of cancer. It is not a light listen either thematically or musically. Mm-hmm. I've had some family passings recently, and it felt incredibly cathartic and just this maelstrom of grief and catharsis together. Again, it's heavy. It's not all the time music at all, but for that moment, for what I needed there, oh my God, just absolutely blew me away.
That's great.
Yeah.
Frail Body, you said?
Frail Body.
Okay. I'm going to demand a text list of these. And like, if it needs to be a Bandcamp thing, we can do that. But if anybody is on Spotify, even though as we will continue to say, fuck Spotify into the dirt. But as you listen to this podcast on Spotify, I imagine most of you.
It was incredible.
Moving right along. Okay. So we will add them to the list.
I got asked to play a very last minute opening gig for a group from Tennessee called Rick West and another group from Houston called Shallow Water. Rick West was super, super fun, kind of slacker rock stuff. Shallow Water, because of time constraints at the venue, I actually only got to play one song, but thankfully I saw them again 2 days ago. I'm talking about this now because their debut album would be in my top 5 of the year, but I'm about to talk about them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Shallow Water remind me a lot of another kind of Texas cult band called Lift to Experience, who are post-rocky, country, shoegaze kind of combination. There is a lot of country in their influence, but they tune their guitars way down. Blake, who's the guitarist, is an incredible emotive guitarist with his work, and it's just a wall of sound at sometimes, but there's still this really pretty incredible emotional through line for their stuff. Their debut album there as well just got released a couple of months ago. I interviewed them on it, and now I got to open for them and actually see a full show. The album's great. They are even better live.
That's awesome.
So that was absolutely kick ass. And yes, I will add that to kind of the text list. One thing that was more of a social event, but I got to see some cool bands as well. I write for Stereo Gum, and I got to go to the Stereo Gum set, which
was 14
straight hours of music.
Nice.
Which was completely insane. But I finally got to meet everybody from Stereo Gum in person, which was fantastic. I got to hang out with the dudes in the Armed for a little bit. I met a band called Wishy, who is from Indianapolis. They were very firm that fuck Bloomington for some reason. I don't know how Indiana works. But they were super catchy, kind of 90s grungy group. That was a lot of fun, and just meeting people, chatting with people, meeting some of the bands, hearing about tour stories, those sorts of things. It was fantastic.
Awesome.
I guess the last thing was the last proper show I saw was Local Homies and Heroes Good Looks, who were one of the first bands that not only withdrew, but were on national television when they withdrew.
Talking about it. Okay.
Yeah. Which was huge. They are going to have their second album come out in June, actually on my birthday, which is awesome.
Nice. Nice.
They've been toiling on that new record for a while. It's kind of country rockish stuff. And now being able to hear it because the first single has been released, if it's gone, and hearing the other ones that are kind of burbling up, and I know now there are studio versions of it, it's just sounding better and better, and I'm really looking forward to that release because that's the next time they're playing in Austin. That felt like a good farewell to it because they were another band that did withdraw from official South By things, lost money at South By, but still stuck to their guns, stuck to their moral principles, and I think they're even better for it because they earned a lot of clout and a lot of respect through that, and the new album is going to kick ass. I mean, Stereo Gum and Pitchfork have both been pretty rapturous about it, so I'm excited.
Cool. Very cool.
That's right. South By.
All right, Mr. Modesty over there. You buried a lead in the midst of there, and this can be a transition into discussing the albums of 2024. You mentioned that you played there. Can you tell the people what you were playing? And, you know, I know we normally do plugs at the end of the show, but like...
Yeah, might as well.
You know.
Well, formerly I had a one-piece white dude with a guitar project named Makaija. And I did redo that at this show because it was so last minute to open for Shallow Water. And my... violinist's partner is a drummer and he played 9 shows that week. So everybody Jesus. Else was just like, I was like, do not worry about this. Like, we'll do something else at another point. But it's now a 5-piece group. We're playing more shows coming up. We're recording music in this full group, which is drums, bass, fiddle. I've got a banjo player that also plays tenor guitar, and then me, white boy with the guitar again. And it's been really, really good. But that show was super fun.
Is it still under the banner of Makaija?
It's still Makaija, yes.
Very cool. So The Ballroom on Fire released for most of the public on February 5th. And I will just, you know, I know it does, maybe you don't feel good plugging yourself, but I will just say it's a great record and everybody should go check it out. Preferably on Bandcamp and, you know, where you can actually donate or at the very least, you know, show your support there. But of course it is available on all the major music services, but we would prefer that you listen to it on Bandcamp. Something that I myself have majorly slacked on. I kind of started it in tandem when I was releasing stuff on SoundCloud originally, and then I did not keep up with it. And I feel like, yeah, it's the simple fact that like DistroKid does not just like, if it just made it all go into mm-hmm. one place, it would be so satisfying. But the fact that it's this one extra outside step, it's always, you know, the last thing I think about. But yeah. I definitely need to get my stuff back up on there. So yes, go show Nathan some love, please. And so let's talk about some other of our favorite albums of 2024. And you are the guest, so I'll let you kick it off.
I'm going to start with the one that I think you would personally like the most.
Okay.
And of course, I'm also putting myself in a bit of a trap here because the man I'm about to talk about is from Georgia, the country, and pronunciation is hard. But
okay, you can spell it out to me because what I will say is as we do this top five, I want a list of everything you saw at South By so we can cover mm-hmm. that somewhere. But I will try and build a playlist. So if you want to shout out like a track or two from each mm-hmm. album as we go through, I'll build it in real time. So yeah, I got it ready to go. And I would love to hear your attempt at the pronunciation. Lay it on me.
The first album is called Exploring Together by a guy named Sophilium, I think. Sophilium.
I think that's a pretty solid pronunciation. I'm gonna roll with it. I like it. Okay.
It's
Exploring Together. Tell me about it.
It's an extremely laid back, chill, welcoming, somewhere between house and ambient music, but a lot of the melody is coming from percussion instruments. So it's tuned drums, thumb pianos, those sorts of things.
Okay.
And I got to interview this guy a little bit ago, and he just seems like a very open-minded, constantly pulling from different genres. And there's also a feeling of kind of mischief or playfulness to a lot of these tunes that I just really, really love. The opening song is called A Glimpse of Enlightenment, which I think is one of the best opening tracks of this year because it is so warm and kind of feels like a hug a little bit. But there's like later things that he does, Rapa Nui or Kilimanjaro, and he's kind of trying to transport you to a different place. Kilimanjaro in particular is very playful. I've just adored listening to it. It is so easy to listen to, and I know sometimes that can be a trap of like easy listening, but there's a lot going on. He'll create loops and he's just constantly adding more elements that always kind of perk up my ears. It's definitely a headphones album or really good speakers. I've loved walking to it. That's been a big thing for me. And yeah, he was a delight to talk to over email. And it's really cool to talk to somebody who's literally on the opposite side of the world who shares an appreciation and love of electronic and house music.
That's awesome. That is killer. Okay,
I think you're
very,
really
very excited
like that.
To dive in. I mean, literally based on the cover art alone and some of these track titles. Okay, so I've got A Glimpse of Enlightenment on there, Rapa Nui, and did you have a third?
Kilimanjaro.
Kilimanjaro. Let's do that as well. Add to playlist, and you'll be able to find this on the dreaded Spotify under the Archivy podcast, our favorite albums of 2024 so far.
Yay.
All right.
And you, what about you?
So I will say from the top, and we joked about this off mic, but anybody that's listened to our previous episodes together knows this. Mine are going to be like definitely like the more right of center, if you will. Not as many left field picks, but maybe left field for still some of our listeners. I don't know, because I do have some odd tastes. A band that I have kind of slept on, and so I made an active effort to like, hey, they got a new one. Let's give this a shot. Mannequin Pussy. The album I Got Heaven. Really the first one I've given a proper start to finish listen to and just kind of knocked my socks off. Really, I get it, I guess is what I have to say. I get the appeal. So much energy, aggressive, but with just like the right amount of like snark and wit to it. Incredible like vocals, and just a fucking rocking band. Yeah, I don't know why they're one of those that's been in the ether for I feel like what, like 3 or 4 years now, and I finally took a dive in. I have not gone back to any of the earlier records yet, so I was going to ask you where you think I should go next. And I was also going to use that as a segue to do a little branch. I started this year by just kind of I was doing good with it for a bit, and then like some actual like current albums came out that I was like, I got distracted by these. But I was trying to make an effort to like, hey, dude, at least once a week, just pick one artist that like you know or you've heard something by that you like or you're curious about, but you've really never given a proper mm-hmm. chance. And so Sun Ra was the first one for the first like week or two.
Damn, that's a strong one to open with. 2024.
I was just like, dude, this is my shit. Like, what, you know, where's this been all my life? And then I might have mentioned this to you in text, I can't remember, but Death Grips, a band that I had struggled with for a very long time. And then all of a sudden I went back to the Money Store. And I was just like, wait, I think I like this now. Do I love this now? And and so then subsequently, I just went chronologically through everything. And there's some peaks and valleys, but overall, I was just like, oh, dude, I totally like, I was an idiot. I don't know what I heard that kind of like turned me off initially, or if I'm just in a like with some of the other stuff I've listened to in the interim, I'm more like it's more approachable to me, but I fucking love them now. So those were my two big like early part of the year where I was just like, oh, dude, I like, what was it? I slept on these and I'm glad. So Mannequin Pussy in that spirit is the first new one of this year where I was like, hey, I need to check out this band and I love it. So.
Yeah, I have two thoughts, which is the first one is literally today I was going through possible karaoke songs from my local bar. They have I Seen Footage as karaoke, and I was like, I'm not gonna do that, obviously, but I was like, what sort of demented ass night or person like would create that and be like, I'm gonna do Death Grips at karaoke. And then as for a Mannequin Pussy, I would suggest the last album, Patience.
Okay.
The one before this, because if I remember correct, yeah, it has Drunk 2 on it, which is
That's
kind of,
that was my first introduction song, and
yeah.
I was like, I like this, but I think in context, I would understand it better in an album as opposed to a single, which is how it was introduced to me.
Yeah, I think working backward is totally fine for them.
For sure. All right, so yeah, that's my number five. I Got Heaven from Mannequin Pussy, and I mean, the maybe the most fun band name, to, current band name to say. So, we'll just keep saying it.
I have one in a different direction that's fun to say because there's an exclamation point in their name.
All right, well, don't blow out the mic, but good by all means.
And also the album title is ridiculous, and I will figure out how I'm going to refer to this album title. The band is called Taper, like the little South American mammal pig horse thing.
Okay.
That I adore, and the album is called The Pilgrim, Their God, and the King of My Decrepit Mountain.
The Pilgrim, their
Just the
God,
Pilgrim. We're just gonna say
and the
the
King
Pilgrim,
of My Decrepit
Decrepit
Mountain
Mountain.
by
We're just
Taper.
gonna go with the Pilgrim.
All right.
They are not as proggy as that title would suggest. There's a lot of actually folktronic influences in this. The band it reminded me the most was XTC,
Okay.
and especially their album Skylarking, because there's a mixture of analog and digital instruments. There's a very passionate, eccentric lead singer that is doing kind of a concept album about nature and humanity within nature. And they are simultaneously making pop songs while also combining them into this narrative. It definitely goes in some strange directions, but they always come back to something really catchy, which I am just really impressed by the ability to sort of straddle that line between pop and prog. And yeah, it was XTC that was the band that it reminded me the most. I've come back to it a lot despite how heady a lot of it is. And that's one of the best compliments I can give, that I can pluck out individual songs or I can listen to the full album. That's not usually where I land on with prog adjacent or concept album adjacent projects. If I was gonna pick a song, I would say the single My God is a good one. Really excellent lyrics as well.
I was going purely based off of titles, and I went Act One, The Pilgrim, because Broken Ark, because it's the Ark of E, baby, and Mountain Song, The Closer, but I will add that one as well.
So, highly
Sorry,
recommended.
my God, yes,
My God.
okay.
And they're brand new. That is their debut album,
Oh, very
which
cool.
is exciting. They've got a lot of promise and a lot of potential to grow, but they've already made something quite excellent.
And where are they based again?
From the UK.
Very cool.
I'm not sure exactly where, but over there,
Six
across the
stupid,
pond.
ugly, idiot, smelly pigs is their Spotify description. Okay, love
They all
it.
wear the taper masks,
I
too.
like that. Very, very cool. All right. This is another band from the UK you might be familiar with.
Okay.
They're called The Smile. Yeah, it's Wall of Eyes. What a shocker. These guys make music that we enjoy, and they made another great record. I mean, it's almost more, I don't know. one of those that's almost boring to talk about because I feel like it's very hard for me to be subjective about them, not the or
Objective.
objective about them, excuse me, because music is so subjective. And I just, yeah, it's one of those things where I don't know, one of where you just act. I personally just actively like just kind of smile at the creativity at work while I'm like while I have
Jokes.
headphones on, where like every direction it decides to go off, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, I would never know how to even like sequentially take it there, but I would never have the thought process to get there. And that's what I love about them is just the, I don't know. It literally feels like sometimes they're just like snatching these things out of thin air. I mean, it's a weird parallel to draw, but it's like similar to when I listen to like Jack White or something, where I'm just like, oh, you just pulled a guitar part that sounds like it's existed forever and it's this iconic thing, and like, but it just like, and you just found it, you know what I mean? This one, obviously, I feel like the general reaction has been like, hey, we like this because it sounds even more like Radiohead, like because it's a little less weird, but still, you have this the incredible drumming, dude. Just some of the most just fun, free form, like jazzy, electric, just it's so playful. So much fun to see live when I caught them last year. And that's the other thing is I felt like the reason this is my number four, as much as I like it, is because like by the time it was delivered, I felt like I already heard like 70% of it because I saw them live. They needed to fill out their set. And it's like, hey, this is basically everything we're working on in the studio. It's like, this is all stuff that's going to be on the next record, which was awesome. But yeah, and it's like it delivered. I really don't know what to say beyond that. What'd you think? What'd you think of it?
Well, the first thing I was going to say, I want to shout out the drummer as well. I'm forgetting his name, but I was
Dude,
aware
I
of
do.
him.
I was trying to just casually be like, eh, the drummer's amazing. And I'm sitting there like,
But I'm aware of his work through Chewbacca Hutchings and The Comet Is Coming, which were really. Chewbacca Hutchings is
Tom
an ex
Skinner. Tom
Tom Skinner.
Skinner.
His work with various jazz groups out of the London scene over the last couple of years has been absolutely amazing. I think he's one of the best drummers out there right now because he's able to blend prog and rock and electronic and jazz influences together so smoothly. Like, those are very different things. They're very different moods. And it seems completely natural to him. He's playing with two members of Radiohead. He's playing with Giants. And I still think he's the most impressive musician in that album, you know?
Oh, I would by far agree. And it's like, yeah, you're working with two legends, essentially. It's crazy.
Yeah. I
I got Wall of Eyes, obviously, Telharmonic. By all means, throw your picks at me.
Bending Hectic,
Which
I
was
think.
that was the big kind of like live premiere at the show. I think they
Oh,
had just
nice.
dropped it as a single, and then they kind of, you know, they jammed on it even further,
I
when we
had a
saw them.
friend in my music chat say something though that stopped me cold about this album, which was one of the most directed burns. Not to me necessarily, but I hope you don't get hurt by this too much, but it was so hilarious. He said, "Yeah, the new smile's cool, but it feels kind of like fish with for guys with too many Criterion Collection picks."
I feel, you know, attacked and seen at the same time. I say this a lot lately, but I'm like, I feel attacked, but I also feel really seen because it's not wrong. It's not wrong. I guess I am a cliche. We're all becoming a cliche, Nathan. We're all becoming a cliche.
I understand. It's okay.
Oh man.
I
That's a
remember
great line
laughing.
though. I'm like, yep, no, that's the smile to a T. Because you
Yeah.
can't call it dad rock. You can't,
No,
you
it's
cannot
too
call it dad rock.
complicated and too like energetic to be dad rock, but
Yes.
it's certainly Criterion Collection core.
For sure. I'm comfortable with that subgenre, for sure. Okay, your number three, sir.
Yeah, I haven't been going in exact order because I don't know what order. These are all coming from such different
Mine are kind of
emotional
all in a
places.
vague order,
Yeah.
except for my number one, which may surprise you. I'm actually really interested because you may be like, dude, what the fuck? Or you may be like, dude, that's actually my number one. I don't
Okay.
know. So, yeah, let's continue.
I'm gonna save my number one as the album that made me cry the most so far this year.
Okay, well, I got two of those, and they were kind of fighting for the number one slot, but I mean, it was pretty definitive what the number one is for me.
Nice.
Again, I think it might surprise you.
I'm
I don't know
excited.
that we've ever said a word to each other about
Foreshadowing.
this outfit. Go ahead. Yeah, I'm building suspense for a podcast that hopefully people are, they're like, I'm here, just fucking get to it. Like, why'd you stop the show cold? What are you doing?
My next one is somebody I just interviewed. I haven't put up the interview yet. A Brazilian artist
You
named
should.
Sophia.
I'm
Yo,
so sorry to
my
interrupt, but
podcast,
can't
The
yes,
Wood House.
can you mention, yes, where people can find said interviews that you have referenced? Yes.
Woodhouse Interviews or drwoodhouse.com, because it was only $12 a month to do Dr. Woodhouse, which is hilarious. But that I used to run the 2010s website. We are moving everything over to the Woodhouse because we're trying to do some new things. But some old things we're trying to do is a lot of different interviews. And I just talked with this woman from Brazil, Sophia Ferrer, I believe is how you pronounce her name, and her new album, Ponta da Lingua, which is Tip of the Tongue. And basically, it is weirdo pop. It is definitely Kate Bush and Bjork inspired, but with a twist from Brazil's long history of tropicalia, of jazz, of samba, those sorts of things, of bossa nova. It reminded me a lot of a couple of years ago, still probably my favorite album of this decade so far. There was a Montreal artist named Chloe Pelgag who released an album called Notre Dame that was seemed like this warped version of art pop from the 80s, fed through a modernist lens. And this one kind of reminds me of that. There are a lot of weird rhythm and tempo changes, but it's still danceable. Her harmonies are insane throughout this album. If you are a vocalist or you're into the techniques of vocalists, you will be blown away by some of the rhythms and quick turns and tight harmonies she's able to do. And she also has some amazing kind of heart-stopping emotional moments. There's a song called Orlando, which is based on the book Orlando by Virginia Woolf and talking about inhabiting multiple different minds and spaces and bodies. And the last song, which is the title track, is kind of a self-pep talk that I found very emotionally gratifying, even though I had to, translate the lyrics through Google Translate because it all is in Portuguese. But just an absolute delight of a record. I think the opening Autofagia is a great tune. I think Orlando's fantastic, and the title track, if I was going to pick three.
Awesome. I got them all on there. Hell yeah.
Weirdo pop, man. Why not?
I look forward to diving into that.
All right, what made you cry?
Speaking
What's the first one that made you cry?
Well, no, this is my number three. I
Okay.
guess this top three in general, they all got to me in different ways. Maybe this is the least emotionally engaging, more sorry, I totally just stepped on like the perfect segue. You said weirdo pop. Speaking of pop, baby. Idols Tank is my number three. I mentioned pop. It's my favorite fucking song on the album. A very, very different vibe, in a great way. That's kind of a, to me, like kind of a turnkey for the whole record, in as much as they finally have gotten to this place where it's like, we don't have to exist at a 13 all the time. And we can actually, there's a lot more power and a little bit more reservation. And to me, they started moving in that direction on Crawler, which I think was the strongest record to date, while maybe not pound for pound the like most banger filled, but it did house my favorite, it's still probably my favorite song they've ever done, which is When the Lights Come On. And I thought it was a real like step in what I hoped was like, hey, we can show people we're not just this one note thing, because I never looked at them as one note, and the songwriting's only gotten better and better. The singles they released were very much like, hey, this is what you expect, but again, they threw Grace in there, I think, as the second single, almost as a signal to be like, hey, doing a little something different, like we're We're changing it up a bit. I love Roy. I love fucking Hall and Oates, dude. Obviously, Dancer, Gift Horse, Dancer featuring fucking LCD Sound System. I never thought that was a pairing that I needed in my life, but I love it. I'm glad it happened. Of course, Nigel Godrich of The Smile and Radiohead fame did some production work on here. I just definitely not like, oh, this is immediately out of the gate my new favorite or anything like that, but just a solid record, in my opinion. I keep going back to it. Definitely doing a lot more cherry picking than I maybe normally do. Not a lot of like start to finish listens, but again, pop, pop, pop. I can't. It's incredibly catchy and Joe Talbot is right up there with my number. I don't want to spoil which number, with one of my other bands, with another front man, as I think like one of the best dudes doing it right now, personally. So,
I've really enjoyed Idols over the last couple of years. I mean, since their debut, but I have been kind of struck by how polarizing they've become in certain circles of like, they're cringe, they're, you know, too obvious or whatever. And like, my response is always like, fellas, is it cringe to feel things?
Yeah. One, and like, I think that's kind of been part of the ethos from the very get-go was, yeah. I mean, that's very much, and again, they're a band that like when I got into them, I went back and I listened to their early EPs, which are very, very different. They hadn't really found themselves yet. And Brutalism is like this like hard shift towards like, this is what we fucking are now. And I feel like that got them a lot of attention. And I think Joy as an act of resistance is a fucking like masterpiece. I think it's just it's so good. But I always was just like, there's further to go here. There's more to do with what you guys are so great at, which is just like, again, to me, it's no frills, no bullshit. That's the thing when people want to get into the like, is it try hardy? Is it cringy? Blah, blah, blah. I'm just like, it's earnest. And I think earnestness makes people really fucking uncomfortable sometimes.
Deeply. Yes. Deeply. And I've also noticed people can't just be like, it's not for me. You know what I mean? They have to be like, this is shit. And it's like, okay, what's getting to you here?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Maybe we want to look in the mirror a little bit.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But yeah, I was obviously anticipating it greatly. And I also will be seeing them at Rabbit Rabbit in Asheville in September. Nice. So that's very excited for that. My other one, just while we're talking concerts, Modest Mouse, Pixies, Cat Power in Charleston in like a month or two, end of May, I think. Yeah. Very, very excited for that one. Have not seen Modest Mouse in a minute, and I have never seen Pixies live and always wanted to. So
that'll be so
fun. I kind of wish I'd been able to do it, you know, 15 years ago when when it was the actual Pixies, but you know. Here, whatever. I'll take what I can get. I'll take what I can get. never seen Frank Black live. So
no, exactly.
That's enough for me. That'll do it. And again, I have not seen Modest Mouse since the Strangers era. Mm-hmm. So it has been almost a decade. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Well, you mentioned a band that is not always heavy at all times, but their heaviest moments do hit like a sledgehammer. Here's an album that's just a sledgehammer.
Okay.
Like the entire time. Unrelenting. Obsidian Wreath by Infant Islands. I talked about earlier that Frail Body is my favorite show I've seen this year. I am going to die at the Infant Island show. They are playing maybe the smallest venue in Austin. And this album is just a maelstrom of sound. It's screamo, black gaze, black metal adjacent. The fact that Heavenly Blue, who I mentioned earlier, Frail Body, and these guys are all releasing albums this year. We're just in a really great place for extremely heavy emotional music. It is unrelenting. It is furious. It's vicious. Not a light listen on any level, but they're kind of what I was saying about catharsis.
This is going to be the most whiplashy playlist ever. I love it.
It's going to be great. you know, similar to what I was saying about Frail Body, there's so much catharsis to be found. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those rare albums where, even though it is incredibly brutal, I tend to listen to it front to back because it is so well sequenced. Like, the ebb and flow of more tender moments, the ebb and flow of where the vocals are, what comes to the forefront is so well done that it never feels tiring, despite how raw the emotions are. And that's, if I'm going to say three songs, honestly, it's the ending three song run, Unrelenting, Kindling, and Vestigian. And Vestigian is probably my front runner for like heavy song of the year. It is
they just sound intimidating.
It's an intimidating group, and like I said, I'm gonna be in like a venue the size of a goddamn shoebox. Whoa. When I see these guys,
good
I'm
luck,
going to
good
die
luck to you,
it's
brother.
Gonna be great. For heavy, there has been a lot of really great heavy music this year at the Woodhouse. It has been great enough this year. I'd say the genres that have really stuck out to me this year that I've been able to like really go after and find a lot of interesting things have been heavier screamo metal, whatever you want to call it, and electronic music. I'm planning on making an electronic mix of the best electronic songs I've heard so far this quarter, but I have been able to every single month put up 10 metal or metal adjacent records that I've enjoyed in a roundup. And that is just so heartening that people are making music that is heavy and emotionally intelligent and interesting. And Obsidian Wreath for me is still my favorite heavy record of the year.
Nice. Dude, I have to tell you something right now. Because of Zoom and because of your glasses and the way it's reflecting off of the screen, at certain moments, you look like a Fremen. You very much look like you harsh resemble Paul Atreides right now. Actually,
I hope
like
I do when I'm talking about Obsidian Wreath.
Post-desert, yeah, Paul, yeah. Atreides. I don't know if people are familiar with Nathan's haircut, but you definitely got Paul Atreides energy right now. But no, dude, I don't know if you can see it. Like, can you see yourself on my end? Like,
no,
dude,
not to that degree, I don't
okay,
think.
But yeah, the way the screen is lining up on your glasses, you totally have like blue tinted eyes. It's tripping me out. Okay, sorry, had to say that. Obsidian Wreath. From Infant Island to Future Islands,
ooh,
my friend.
Well done. Well done.
At the number two slot. People Who Aren't There Anymore, from one of my top five current favorite bands, doing it. We talked about this on several of our previous podcasts where it was just like, there's been these singles. We know there's a record coming. What I didn't know is all of the singles were going to be on this record. I don't mean that in a bad way at all. It's just like there is stuff from 2 years ago on this record. King of Sweden is on this record, and it is the opener, and it is a fucking banger. It's one of the best songs they've ever done. But more importantly, there are two all-timers on this record. A little bit of context for those that care. Previous record, As Long As You Are, Sam is in a new relationship that is mostly taking place overseas, I believe in Sweden. And that record is a very, like, it's very romantic. It's, like, very hopeful. It's got some darkness, tension in there, some reflective bits, trying to, like, deal with the darker parts of yourself to be better for a person kind of thing. And then COVID happens, et cetera, lots of other things. And then that relationship is not happening anymore. So this record is kind of split. And he's talked about how, like, almost down to the track list, it's almost split in half between, like, well, these were written when we were together. And then these were written almost immediately afterwards and me trying to, like, figure out my shit, blah, blah, blah. And there's definitely some bleed over in between those parts, which is great. Two songs I want to bring up in particular, though. One is called Iris, which I think is the most, like, joyous, danceable song about generational trauma ever. It is an absolute banger. It just makes you want to fucking, like, just move your body. Production on it is, I think that's the one kind of banner statement across this entire record, is the production is at an all-time high. I've always loved the sound of their records and the evolution of it. The first couple records, they're rough. They're really fucking rough. And I love how rough they are. to the point where like they kind of disown a couple of those early records and kind of wish that they weren't out there for consumption, but I love them in spite of it, whatever. So Iris, incredible, but I texted you about this one, and I'll bring it up here again because it inspired a great idea for a podcast episode, which will probably be the next thing that you and I record together. I want to put it down here so that we remember it and so that nobody steals the title. Okay. The song that brought this up is called The Fight, and it is a song that I think I've managed to make it through like maybe three or four times without just absolutely bawling my eyes out, but it is one of the most like gorgeous, heartfelt, soulful things ever, and it's almost a mantra unto itself. It's one of those things you could almost start every day and end every day with to like keep yourself going. It's like that level of hopeful kind of shit. Just very quickly rose to like the absolute heights of the best of what they're capable of. A band that for me has no bad songs. They don't have like, there's no stinker like across the discography where I'm like, oh, that one, definitely skipping that one. You know what I mean? If you're in the mood to listen to them, you're just in the mood for it. So yes, The Fight inspired this episode, which we will commit to doing. I hope you will commit to it as well. You did off mic. Anyways, it's called We Are Trying to Break Your Heart. Subtitle, Music to Bawl Out To. And because this is an audio medium, I will spell that out for you. That's Bawl, B-A-W-L, Music to Bawl Out To. And it's going to be, our top five or maybe our top 10 songs that are just instant tearjerkers. It could be albums, songs, artists, whatever. I think my very good friend, Mr. Tim Niles, is going to join us for this episode because as soon as I told him about it, he's like, dude, I could crush that. And I'm like, dude, bring it on. We are hardcore emo buddies from high school era. We are some My Chemical Romance stands. So that'll be brought to the table along with a lot of other things. I look forward to recording it. We will do that sometime in the future. Okay. The Future Islands record is amazing. I will say, if I want to be a little nitpicky bitch, I so rarely say this, but I think it's a like borderline flawless, like top to bottom, just banger after banger. But I really wish The Sickness was not on this record. It's the one track I would cut. And I think the more and more I think about it, it's not even a sequencing issue. It's the fact that it makes lyrically explicit some things that I think are beautiful because of how general and metaphorical they are throughout the rest of the record. It kind of nails down some specifics in a way that I do not enjoy. I also don't think it's particularly hooky. And I think the record is one track too long. So just carve it out of there. And I think you got a 10 out of 10. But that's part of why it is my number two. I just wanted to throw that out there. I love that fucking record, though. It's great. Not my favorite, but it would be hard to pick a favorite Future Islands record. Very hard.
So I've brought up karaoke before, but another thing that's happened recently is I have a group of friends that we go to karaoke, and we essentially bully other people into doing sad songs sometimes.
Word.
We just start chanting sad, 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 sad. So that works for songs to bawl out to. But it also works for what I'm going to be talking about as my, I guess, number one record, which is Critterland by Willie Carlisle, which is a country record. He is queer. He is an eccentric. He is one of the best lyricists I've heard in years. I think the heir in some ways to John Prine in a way of able to turn a phrase that's both funny and absolutely devastating. It's an album of a lot of ambivalence in terms of not sharing what you need to do in your life to make things better for you and your community around you, about drug addiction, about self-loathing, about self-love. And to kind of give you an idea, the song that I will be recommending from this year on Songs to Bawl Out To is called When the Pills Wear Off. If that's not obvious of what's about to happen, but the lyric I'll leave you with is the end of the chorus is just, and what I call a love affair, they said was a death of despair. That is a song about heroin, my friend. And I've not heard a song about heroin that devastating, I think, since either Nirvana or Neil Young's The Needle and the Damage Done. It is bleak on the level of like The Road by Cormac McCarthy. It is just, there is no hope. There is no light. You are just seeing the final shaking trembles of a person who's completely given up. The rest of the record is not like that.
I was going to say, what are two tracks that I could play people before
the opening track, Critterland. The opening track, Critterland, I think is a wonderful fanfare introduction to this amorphous world going back and forth between hope and devastation. But like, yeah, if we're talking sad tracks, When the Pills Wear Off, I texted my friend who told me to listen to this record or re-listen to the record after I had gotten through some of the singles and really enjoyed it. And I just immediately texted back, wow, Willie just sewed up the saddest song of the year thing real early, didn't he? That is wow. Very similar to what you're saying for Future Islands. I have made it through that song twice. And I will revisit, but it's hard. It's really hard.
It's a hell of a song.
So that's I suppose my number one.
My number one just swooped in there out of nowhere. I wasn't expecting it. Just like, dude, an embarrassment of riches already. I was like, fact that the Idols record was amazing, Future Islands amazing, The Smile amazing. I was just like, dude, it's fucking like it's barely March, and like look at how lucky we are. How lucky we are. There's another record just waiting there, dude. February 23rd. And I just remember it was a little after midnight, and I had the thought, I was like, oh yeah, I knew they had a new thing coming out. And I was like, it's been a minute. It's like, let me throw on the headphones. I'm just hanging around, you know. My number one is Loss of Life by MGMT. I fucking love this record, Nathan, so much, and it every time I go back to it, it just keeps like notching up there for me, dude. It is the most I've been just like back in those feels of just like it's not the same, but it's touching how I felt about Oracular at the time, where I was just like, this is like so many different things that I love, and somebody swirled them together in a way that I didn't think was possible. That is just like, again, just like, oh, we like this thing, and we're going to shove it together. And it's like, how does any of this work? And Loss of Life, track to track, is like, okay, we're going to hit like overproduced, like 90s, early 2000 Britpop. We're going to do like the most like full on, laid back, easy listening, soft rock of the 80s, the most Bruce Hornsby ass shit you've ever fucking heard. It's all in there, dude. And we're going to fucking basically parody like 90s alternative with Bubblegum Dog. And it's going to be maybe the catchiest fucking song I've heard all year. But the true, like the thing that sewed it up for me, I was already just in love with a total headphone record. The shit they're doing with layering, transitions, all sorts of weird ambient fuzz that you don't even realize is there the first couple times. It's just texturally amazing. But when I got to I Wish I Was Joking is when I was like, this is my favorite fucking thing in a long time. That is my favorite song of the year. At more so than The Fight, which blew my fucking mind. I don't know why I still feel that way, but yeah, I think I Wish I Was Joking is a like just note perfect track in every way, shape, and form. What did you think of this one? I haven't been able to gauge your response.
I dig it. It's one of those things where I'm almost more fascinated at this point with MGMT about their career trajectory. Has any other band had a trajectory like this where you have this massive accidental pop blow up and then basically disappoint everybody, but not actually, because congratulations is a good record, because it's not as poppy. And
so is the self-titled one, and so is Alien Days, and no, so is fucking but Little like, Dark Age. Yeah, that's
it's like this retrospective of like Oracular Spectacular was this like weird sudden burst into stardom and fame, and it seemed like it was never what they wanted.
Absolutely not what they wanted to make.
It's a like I want to see a documentary about their history so bad.
Oh, it would be fascinating. I 100% agree. And the kind of active choice to run away from all of that and to actively comment on it throughout the rest of your career, essentially. Like, there is so much in this record that feels like a, you know, coming up on near 20-year reflection on Oracular, you know. I guess we've definitely hit the 15-year mark already, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, anyways. But yeah, dude, there's some killer ones. People in the Streets and Dancing in Babylon have these like great 80s vibes. There's some fantastic horns on here as well. Just so many just great, interesting little touches and textures. I don't know. I keep finding stuff in it that I love. I don't know. I'm just knocked out by it. And again, on an emotional level, I see the title and I'm like, oh, did they lose somebody? Is this like a literal loss of life? And then like parts of it, I'm like, no, I think this is about like, it's maybe more about middle age or getting to a point where you're like, oh fuck, there's literally like what else is left here? Or the transition into like a more stable family driven thing where it's like, oh, okay, I had this like wild creative life or whatever. I was like this individual and now I'm just a fucking like just a husband or I'm just a this or I'm that. There's a lot of different ways I think you can take it. It feels simultaneously personal and universal. I did not expect to be as knocked out by it as I was, but it's one of my favorite records in a bit.
Breaking news, Noah likes synth pop. Who knew?
What a shocker. What a shocker. And again,
MGMT and Future Islands as your top two. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I said from the get-go, these are going to be the boring picks. So,
no,
again,
think if we have the main overlap, I think I completely agree with you on the Future Islands one. I think partially because Sam Harrington's lyrics very often, I mean, we covered Inch of Dust, right? And there's a lot of stuff there that's obvious, but a lot of stuff that he covers up in poetry. And mm-hmm. his ability to, outside of that one track that you were referring that I'm forgetting the name of, that you were like, could we just cut that? That album does such a good job of pulling metaphor with personal details.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might be his best lyrical album.
I think yes, and again, that's always been the strong suit, which is like they have a very particular sound. They got their sound down like 3-4 albums ago. You know what I mean? And it's like I know I've heard if there's one thing you can kind of lay at their feet, it's the complaint that some bands get eventually. It's the AC/DC problem, which is like, oh fuck it, everything sounds the same, doesn't it? Like,
this one's a little different though. I think
there's a lot of dude. I mean, King of Sweden in particular. Just on a vibes level alone. I remember when that dropped as a single, I was like, there's something different here. And dude, even Iris, again, feels like it's in their wheelhouse, but it's a completely different, like, just vibe and mode than you've ever gotten on. Like, I can't point to, here's the comp for that track on another album. Whereas, like, some of the singles in the past, I'm like, I can draw a straight line between a lot of them. But, you know, I do feel like they've branched out quite a bit. And I just, you know, once again, they got some of the best sense in the business, man. I just love everything they do production-wise. It's so great.
I think if we're going to do, like I said, if we're going to do overlap, I think for me, my favorite of the albums you mentioned is absolutely that Future Islands album. And I really think you are going to dig Exploring Together.
I look forward to diving into all of these. Again, you know, there was the Obsidian.
Obsidian Wreath.
Obsidian Wreath. Yeah, does terrify me, but I will give it a shot. So yeah, any things you're looking forward to? Any other records that we know like are on the horizon that have been announced? I will say just in the last week. Because we've mentioned her before on one of our episodes together, Miss Remy Wolf as her sophomore album coming out in April, I believe. I forget, the title escapes me at the moment, but this is the follow-up to Juno, which was in my top five the year it was released. I like her quite a bit. I think this, from what I've gathered, it's maybe moving a little more in a not ballady direction, but a little more stripped down, showcasing her vocals as opposed to the more danceable Prince infused vibes of the first record and the early EP as well. But I really like her. She's a fun time. So I look forward to that.
Well, the main things I have are shows coming up, and on top of dying at Infant Island, I have an okay. extremely funny week in April, which is soft pop connoisseur Donnie Benet from Australia.
Dude, I love Donnie Benet. I don't know if you ever talked about him, but of course, hell yeah.
Konnichiwa. He's so good. I love him. That's going to be such a fun show. 3 days after that is Metz, Canadian hardcore legends. And then 3 days after that is Swedish Argentine folk singer Jose Gonzalez. Dude, that is in a week.
It's a nice little triple feature there. Hell yeah. In it's a week. So, that's going to be nuts.
Even the softer aspects, Donnie and Jose, are so different in terms of tone. Like every single one of those hits a different emotional thing. And I love that I'm going like to a soft pop rock show, one of the most brutal hardcore punk bands in the world, and then Jose Gonzalez at like a theater, you know, like those are the things I'm looking forward to, because that's just, it's stupid, but it's amazing because it's the full emotional like range.
Absolutely,
I could deal
dude.
With.
Hell yeah. Pack it all in.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, dude, I look forward to hearing about those shows. Obviously, we'll check back in for our Songs to Ball Out 2 episode, and maybe we'll have a few, you know, shows to report on by then. But yeah, dude, as always, thank you for doing this. A pleasure once again
me.
To have our man in Texas, Mr. Nathan Stevens, joining us here on the Archivy podcast. Please, everybody, go check out the playlist if you want to. On Spotify. Again, that's the Archivy podcast, our favorite albums of 2024 so far. Thanks everybody for listening. And I don't know what we'll be back with next week, but something's coming. Something's coming. Hope everybody enjoyed our big Doom chat last week with the boys. Maybe we'll get another four-man pod going. I don't know. Stay tuned to the Archivy. Thank you once again to Nathan. We're signing off, and we're going to go chat about some interesting stuff, but you guys don't get to hear that. More on that at a later date. All right. Bye-bye.